Good morning, Stuart Brash, and we started on the 15th, on the 2nd of March, so 17 weeks later we're up near the Attack Creek, and it's an interesting week we're covering here now. And if you look at the journal, there's quite a few pages devoted to this week and the events on Attack Creek, so we'd actually urge people, if they can get hold of a copy of Stuart's journals, to actually have a read here, because where a lot of his entries are fairly brief, he goes into a lot of detail about what's happened this particular week. They've been pushing out to the northeast into the Barkly Tableland, but realised at the tail end of the week we've just finished that that wasn't going to take them anywhere because of lack of water, plenty of grass, so they retreated back to Keckwick Ponds.
Now, I might sort of preface today's expedition diaries with, really, this is, you might call, the start of the misunderstanding, the cross-cultural misunderstanding in Central Australia with the conflict between the Warramungu and Stuart at this point, because we see an event which unfortunately is replicated over and over again in terms of Aboriginal people, whitefellas, blackfellas, over the centuries. And this is only 150 years ago. But what transpires? What actually happens at Attack Creek?
Well, there's actually a number of lead-up contacts between him and the Warramunga people as they retreated back to Keckwick Ponds, and then they go north again and he gets onto this creek that later is named Attack Creek. He doesn't name it Attack Creek in the journal. It's later given that tag. Now, on one particular day, they had three rather amazing we won't say confrontations, they were meetings with Aboriginal people. Firstly, an old fella comes and a couple of other blokes, and they make a present of a couple of possums and some small parrots and other small birds, which are then handed over to Stuart Keckwick and Head, who gratefully accept them because the change of diet is very welcome.
Unfortunately, but I don't understand reciprocation.
No, and the Aboriginal people then start going through the bags, and in particular, they take a rasp, which is needed for shoeing the horses, and a couple of water canteens. Stuart, at this point, gets a bit cranky, and he forcibly removes the objects from the people, though they keep the possums and the pigeons, or whatever it was they were given. Later in the day, a couple of young people come over, a couple of young men come over, and Stuart directs Head to take them a dish of water, which they drink. And then, interesting again, there is the third encounter, the most famous one, where an old bloke and two younger fellas, who he thinks are the sons of the old fella, come up, and this is the famous incident of the Masonic signs.
So what did he see? What did Stuart, what did the old man's purported to have done?
Well, the old man was reputedly quite friendly and seemed to be very intrigued, and Stuart gave Stuart this hand sign, which was apparently equivalent to a Masonic hand sign, which Stuart then returned. And then the young blokes gave the sign as well, and Stuart returned it again. And the culmination of it is one of the old fellow actually patting Stuart on the head and stroking his beard and wandering off feeling very happy with himself. So it's a perplexing incident, and it, as I said, is just one of a number of meetings this particular week between the Warramunga people.
Now, I would assume that the hand signal given by the old fellow was... You know, Aboriginal people use hand language a lot for signalling, and would have been, by coincidence, similar, I'd imagine. And this is just my theory. I've just come up with my own little head then. I'm assuming other people have written the same way, that it was just fortuitous that one symbol matched the other and led to this, well, believed to be understanding by Stuart, but in fact, maybe not.
I agree with you totally. I can't... I mean, it's been written up as a Masonic exchange of Masonic signs, but I think, as you say, it's just so happens that the sign, and I'm not an expert on the Masons, but the sign that Stuart sees as a traditional Masonic sign obviously coincides with some sort of a sign from the...
Signing which
from the old
people
bloke
use.
And
exactly.
The young fella. So they're clearly impressed with him. And so the encounter is albeit friendly. So it doesn't deter Stuart Keckwick and Head from pushing onwards. And they're up on this creek, which we now know to Attack Creek now. It's got lots of good water holes. It must have fish in it. It's certainly got crabs. They start venturing along this creek. And at one point, they come close to an Aboriginal camp, which they skirt around. And they keep going, but when they start to backtrack because they run out of water, the creek doesn't go on forever into the Barkly like they might have hoped. It actually turns into scrubland and the big gums turn into low shrubbery. They decide to backtrack to a point they'd crossed earlier where they knew to be water.
Mm.
And late on the day, on the 26th of June, all the reasonably friendly signs that have been there change completely because they get confronted initially by 70 Warramunga people. It's close on dark, now, but more emerge.
Is Stuart actually camped here at Attack Creek now?
He's not. He's still on the move. Okay. He's heading back to a point where they had crossed the creek earlier and he knew he could get water. But he's on Attack Creek, yes, so he's not camped. He's still on the move. It's late in the day. They're looking for a campsite. But the Warramunga people confront him now. It's no longer signs and gifts. It's a straight-out confrontation. And but Stuart, interestingly, avoids firing on them. And even when the first volley of boomerangs and spears start to come, he says in his journal he tried to make friendly signs, but all to no avail. So what's happening here, and as I said, it's quite complicated in the journal, and it's best for people to have a read themselves. They start backtracking in the dark with the Aboriginal people lighting fires all around them, and they head a fair way back before they figure they're safe and can actually camp the night. And this night, the 26th of June, they don't actually make the camp until 11 o'clock at night.
So they haven't actually fired on the Warramunga at this point, because there is a point where Stuart and his party do shoot.
Sorry,
the
they did actually fire. He says, he gives the impression that it's a reluctant decision and orders the men to fire. He doesn't give any indication of whether any Aboriginal people were hurt or killed. But you'd have to think if they're firing on the men, there's a fair chance that some of the Warramunga would have copped a bullet. Mm. But it's not mentioned in the journal.
I was about to say, because I know in speaking, I think you had a conversation with Dick Kimber as well. I mean, Dick Kimber says it's inevitable that people died, and at least one person is thought to have died in this altercation.
And I certainly, at this point, I would very much defer to Dick. Dick is a most respected historian and knows far more and has done far more research in this area than I certainly have done. And I know he has been speculating on in more detail on what happened there. I suppose from our point of view, with listeners this morning, is that this is a crucial point because Stuart has finally come to the decision that his party is too small to force their way through the Warramunga country. He's at his end in terms of his health. They've got very little food, so he knows that even if he could force his way through and get to the top end, he doubts whether he's got enough tucker to get them all the way back. And of course, the horses are struggling. So he actually makes the decision at this point to abandon the whole expedition and head back. So 26th, 27th of June.
Time to retreat.
Time to retreat. And that, as well, is the sign of part of his greatness, because he did know, and he'll do it again next year when he gets caught in the Lancewood at Newcastle Waters. This man knows when you've got to give up, unlike Burke and Wills, who didn't give up and it cost them their lives. So, amazing man.
On the use of firearms, does he reflect upon the use and the likely loss of life which he's involved in now? Is there anything in his journals?
No mention of it. And that's why I said, it's hard to believe that one of the bullets didn't hit one of the Warramunga people, at least, but he doesn't mention it. He gives the impression that he's only fired it as an absolute last resort, and he's retreating. Mm. And as he retreats, they light fires, and as I said, it's till 11 o'clock at night before they get right back to the safety out of that country. So, but very, very little on the likely impact of their bullets, which is amazing because, as I said at the beginning of today's session, it's quite a long journal entry for this particular week and well worth people getting to a library if they haven't got their own copy and having a read of what he said, because this is a pretty significant week in Northern Territory history.